It's time for the Access of Easy podcast, the weekly technology digest that keeps you ahead of the curve. Brought to you by EasyDNS.com.
Welcome back, everybody, to the Access of Easy podcast, the latest and greatest in data breaching and overreaching. My name is Joey. This is number 385. Len, my co-host in the other panel, as always. Buddy, what's going on? How are you?
Oh, I just came back from the store. I was stocking up on everything I can before the tariffs come into play. Because obviously, it's going to make everything that much more expensive. So I decided to beat the rush and beat the tariffs. So yeah, my closets, everything is full of everything. How are you?
I'm good, man. I'm good. Taking a break from playing Call of Duty with a couple of buddies here. So we'll rip this. I'll go back to that. Experiencing some stick drift second time on my PS5. So I am considering buying the Pro controller where you can just swap the joysticks in and out. Thoughts?
And it's funny because I have yet to experience any drift on mine, which goes to show you how little I play mine in comparison. But my Switch, I've gone through two controllers on my Switch.
Yeah, same. So. Oh, God, the drift on those things is terrible.
Wow, we played... I thought I would play the Switch more than you. I guess we played it the same amount.
Yeah, I play a little... Like, I play in spurts. Generally, I play, like, probably half an hour a day, I would say. I spend playing video games. And then on weekends, if my buddies want to play, like, we'll play a little longer than that. But it's, you know, if you play every day, you're going to get controller problems. These days, especially because... There seems to be some issue with drift on all the consoles. Xbox, same thing. You know, Sony's PlayStation, Nintendo's Switch. We've both experienced it. So I don't know. I'm not sure what to make of all this. They're selling controllers for double the price, basically, that have these like replaceable parts, which is good. But why don't they all just have that? You know, like it's
like new cars. You know, that's why my Atari controller still goes strong. They made them to last. Yeah. So 50 years later, nearly, it's still going strong. So
build the house around it. Those things, eh?
Yeah, bomb shelters, the whole nine yards.
So let's get into the quote from last week here. Life is really simple, but we insist on making it complicated. That was by Confucius, truly a Confucius say moment. Congratulations, Marianne, on getting that one. This week's quote, ability is what you're capable of doing. Motivation determines what you do, and attitude determines how well you do it. That's a good quote. If you know who that was by, without Googling, of course, look it up on your Encyclopedia Encarta CD from 1998 and put it in the comments. And if you're right, you get your next round of renewals on Easy DNS. Can't beat that. So we got some stories here. Where do you want to start? What do you think?
Apple, baby, Apple.
Yeah, okay.
Yeah, because there's a recent discovery in the vulnerability of some of the Apple M-series chips, and this could potentially lead to some information one would deem to be sensitive, such as like getting access to your Gmail, your iCloud, and other applications. And it could get attackers could get access to it by taking advantage of vulnerabilities into the M2, A15, and newer chips. And so the vulnerabilities have been dubbed something called SLAP, speculative load address probing, and FLOP, forward loads on opaque pointers. And let's go into it. So the speculative execution is a technique used by modern CPUs to improve performance by predicting future instructions and executing them in advance. This is one way to make a computer chip quicker without really improving the RAM, making it faster or making them smaller. However, when these predictions are incorrect, it can leave behind trace data, and this could be exploited by the hackers. And so they could take advantage of this by guessing the next memory address in the CPU and get access and the data and retrieve that information. But by manipulating it, they could predict that what's stored in the memory, such as login credentials, browsing history, and even credit card information, because a lot of people use their phones, their computers, their whatever, and this information to enter it without thinking of anything. And unfortunately, that information could be gotten by attackers. So if you're using stuff like Safari or Gmail accounts or Gmail apps, or even anything to do with attaching to an iCloud, which I believe all Apple products do just natively, well, there's could be some serious consequences out there because identity theft and financial fraud and whole things could come as a result. So Apple's aware of this. They've been informed of the vulnerability. So they're working on patches to address them. But there's a problem with this, though, because this is a hardware issue. It's going to be very difficult to deal with it. Because now the hardware has been created. It's now there. So it goes back to, since Apple does manufacture a lot of their stuff, their hardware, it's now they're not, they could now see some of the problems that exist. So moving forward, they could try to address this in the next generation of hardware, next generation of chips that they release. But it goes to show you that even if you have something which deems to be safe today, there's still going to be ways around it. People could attack it and so forth. So what could people do? There's not much, because how else are you going to get access to your Gmail? How else are you going to get access to your banking stuff? You're not going to go physically to the bank. You're going to use an online interface, your phone, your computer, whatever. So it really, it's just, it sucks. This is the reality of it. There's no way around it. Hopefully they fix it and they make the next generation of hardware that is foolproof and can't be subjected to this type of attack. It's too bad. It's not just an Apple thing. This is going to happen to Intel. It's going to happen to AMD, all kinds of stuff. So it's not simply just an Apple thing. This is just a global thing that manufacturers have to be aware of what's going on.
Totally. Apple, to their credit, we often do these stories and there's no comment from the affected company, manufacturer, whatever. In this story, I'll just read the last paragraph. In an email, an Apple representative declined to say if any such plans to patch exist. Quote, we want to thank the researchers for their collaboration as this proof of concept advances our understanding of these types of threats. Based on our analysis, we don't believe this issue poses an immediate risk to our users. Interesting. The researchers say that Apple's going to release a patch or a set of patches to address this stuff. It sounds like, although it is a hardware vulnerability, it's done through some of the software on the device. So I think they can probably patch this. The ongoing struggle, though, this cat and mouse game between people who are looking for ways into these phones. You know, these phones are in the hands of a billion people around the world, if not more. They have, as you mentioned, all your sensitive data, not only, by the way, stuff like your credit card and banking, but Len, a lot of people use these things as like emergency contact, emergency service info cards and stuff like that. You're talking stuff like your blood type, allergies, you name it, stuff that an ambulance driver would want to see, or a doctor in the ER would want to see if you were not conscious or couldn't give it to them. There's a lot of info on these things for a lot of people. And, you know, one of the things we've been slow here to do in Canada is adopt a lot of this. So thankfully that stuff is not on a lot of devices here, but in the States, you know, sort of that, that Vanguard market for iPhones. Yeah. That's going to affect a lot of people in a negative way. And I think Apple owes people an explanation. There's some good comments here as well. Here's a good comment from a guy on the from the website. To avoid all the hardware side channel vulnerabilities that have come out over the past few years, you need to turn off not just speculative execution, but multiple kinds of prefetching, various buffers, caches, out of order execution, some facets of instruction dispatch that allow you to run multiple tasks on idle execution. Basically, every trick we've developed to make computers faster, other than raw clock speed, since the 386 or 486 have to be turned off, the performance penalty probably optimistically starts at 10 times slower and could be hundreds of times slower. It's just not a feasible thing to fix. So they got to come up with something, and doesn't sound like it's going to be super simple either.
We could run Doom on a 486 and even a 386. So
yeah.
Maybe going back to those days, maybe isn't
that's a fact. Thing. That's a fact.
And think of all the schlong pics people take on their phones. And that's
oh God, I know.
So yeah, be very
yeah. We talked about Snapchat on this program once upon a time. Like Snapchat's just a hub for you know what they are.
I don't have Snapchat, so I have no idea.
I had it when I was a younger man, and I now use it for sharing pictures of my kid and other people's kids to the parents. That's about it.
DeepSeek, buddy, DeepSeek. That's a name a week ago I don't think I've heard of. I think it was Monday this past week was the first time I heard. I could be wrong with my timing, but certainly 7 days ago, I never heard of it. And this is a large language model, LLM, developed by a Chinese company that has very strong ties, apparently, to the Chinese government. And it has demonstrated impressive capabilities in various areas, including natural language understanding, generation, and code generation. So when you go to the traditional stuff, the OpenAI and whatever, ChatGPT, and you type in a sentence, the way I understand it, it reads it like a kindergarten, one word at a time. But this, when you punch in a sentence, it reads the whole sentence and it's able to figure out what you're asking or what's the query. So it's able to speed things up with respect to that. So you're not going to be able to use as much horsepower to process every query. So, and this is also open source as well. But either way, they're saying that this could be a Sputnik moment in the AI race. But really, like, is it really a revolutionary thing or just an evolutionary thing, right? Like, I look at it, seems to be something that's rather cool. If they're able to use a lot less resources, that you could simply run it on home computers, for instance, and you don't have to have server farms full of GPUs to run queries, well, that's a good thing, but it's not, in my opinion, a revolutionary step. It's just an evolutionary step. So, like, I like this thing in terms of what it's trying to achieve, in terms of trying to streamline it to make it more without as much horsepower to make things work. But in the end, like, is it really a giant leap for mankind? Nah. Like, it's a cool thing. Still, they were DDoS too. That's like a different topic altogether. The very first day they were suffered some sort of DDoS. And on top of that, there's some questions to do with if you install the application on whatever device you have, that it could be logging keystrokes and stuff like that. So it could be sending information back to the mothership that you don't want to have sent back there. So it could be another place where it's a honeypot. Granted, it's open source, but what is querying, the data center's querying? Who has ownership of that? What's on it?
That's who.
Right. Yeah. Like the interface is open AI. Sorry, it's open source, but the in terms of where the information is being stored, that's, you know, I'd be careful with using this thing. Very interesting stuff, but I would be very hesitant with using it, in my opinion.
It's not even really that interesting, honestly.
Have you tried it out?
Yeah, I messed around with it a little bit. The reason I say it's not that interesting is not because it's, you know, like you said, an evolutionary LLM, an evolutionary AI interface. It is. It's neat. But it's still got all, I mean, at least for you and me, right? It's still got all the same problems, and for other privacy-focused people, that ChatGPT, Gemini, Claude, whatever else, Midjourney, you know, all these things. The problems.
Two of them I never heard of, by the way. Yeah, Claude and Midjourney.
Midjourney is images only. Claude is, I think, Anthropic's model. So, like, these guys, amazing, first of all, that people like Sam Altman, here in Canada, called Sam Altperson, and others in the AI space said nothing about where search queries were being stored, what data was being mined, what internet sites were being scraped, which subreddits were being, you know, leached of information, presumably valuable information, given that they're about to raise it like a $24 billion or half a trillion dollars, something like that valuation. I forget how much it is, but the stuff is worth money, and they never seem to want to talk about it, any of these guys. DeepSeek shows up literally out of the blue. This nuclear bomb drops on the market on like a Sunday afternoon or something. And what happens? Everyone starts to freak out about privacy and where do the queries go? The US should ban this. There's actually a Polymarket prop bet on whether or not the US will ban this inside of 100 days. I think it's at like 10 or 15% right now. Then you got these guys like Altman, like I was saying before, going, oh, it's an impressive model, but, you know, XYZ. It's a cool feature, but XYZ. The thing that we should also be thinking about is how this basically pulls the rug on this idea that AGI and LLMs and all this other stuff needs tons and tons of overhead. Like, how much money have these AI companies been raising? How much money has NVIDIA been making on the back of the AI bubble? Turns out it's like a facade. It's like, you know, you just don't need all this stuff. It's just impressive to be able to say that you need it for this super powered AI search model, AI user interface, you know, AI GUI, but it doesn't produce anything spectacular. This is the same. I see people online saying the same thing. This has the same problems that Gemini, ChatGPT have. And how many times, by the way, have you and I, for the other show, tried to use AI to streamline some stuff, whether it's like show notes or YouTube descriptions or whatever? It just doesn't do a good job. Like, no sane person could think that this is like a high quality product. You still have to do a ton of revising and editing and voice changing and all that. It just doesn't. It doesn't, it doesn't pass the smell test for the value that it's giving the stock market. And so do I, you know, to quote Charles Hugh Smith here, do I think it's a Sputnik moment? No. Oh my God, no. Let me know when this thing can come up with like a basic description for a podcast episode or a basic description of a movie, or like write a movie script, or like it can't, these things, at least the retail facing products, can't do any of this well. And maybe it's just because I'm picky, or we're, you know, you and I are picky about the products we put out there. But when I look and see what the outputs are, they're not that great. So no, I don't think it's a Sputnik. And I still think AI as a technology is way overplayed. Now, maybe it's possible that everyone out there is just so dumb that the stuff that this thing produces looks good and looks valuable and looks like $1 trillion, you know, in terms of market cap. I just don't agree. Maybe I'm the wrong guy to ask. I don't know. But this stuff is still, I think, a ways away. In terms of time, that may not be that long from competent and capable and replacing people. You know, how many years have we heard that AI is replacing people's jobs? I'm not sure that it is, at least not in any meaningful sense yet. But, you know, I'm sort of carrying on here. I don't think this is that big a deal. And I think the market, you know, by and large, has basically shaken off whatever this this quote unquote Sputnik moment was when this thing launched.
As a recoup, because I know that NVIDIA took a pounding on,
you know, NVIDIA. Yeah, maybe. But like, if you look at the NVIDIA 1 year chart, like it's up and to the right, you know, like it could have been anything. Absolutely. Anything could have caused a 15% drop in NVIDIA, anything. You know, like it doesn't take much. This thing just happened to be a perfectly tailored bear case, and it only took it 15%, you know?
One would say only 15%, another person would say hundreds of billions. So
yeah, people who don't understand nominal versus real value would say hundreds of billions for sure. Yeah.
So it's, you know, it's a decent chunk, and I'm not sure if it moved them overall in terms of the overall market cap value, if they went down a notch or two. Like, I don't follow this at all, to be honest, but I don't know. It just seems that it's funny that simple app that's been released that was developed for something like $10 million was able to move markets that quickly and that severely. And if this could do it, I'm sure there's going to be other things out there that's coming down the pipe that's really
going to take them maybe up. No, don't get me wrong. I think that's possible, then. I don't want to discount that, but this is not it.
Probably not, but either way, it's a step in the right direction, but in some way, maybe sidestepping. But let's move on to this OAuth implementation. And this is for online, major online travel services. Well, this exposed millions of airline users, and it gives them exposure to being at risk of account takeovers, because the vulnerability, which was discovered by researchers at Salt Security, it shows off the dangers of having a misconfigured OAuth authentication process and the potential of third-party integration to introduce significant security risks. And the travel service right now remains, you know, kind of shaken, because they provide like stuff like hotel, car rental solutions, and a lot of things that are integrated with commercial airline online services. So there's a lot of it is just integrated online to make it seamless for the consumer in the end. But still, if it's misconfigured, it could potentially lead to millions of accounts at risk and having an account takeover. So it goes to show you that this is a real problem out there for people who want to have convenience. Convenience sometimes comes at a cost.
What's the trade-off, Len? What's the trade-off? You know,
sometimes you're just going to be your information is going to end up on the dark web. But in this is not an isolated
going right to the worst case scenario.
Well, apparently, I did a little bit of digging here. It's not an isolated case, because Salt Security, they previously discovered similar vulnerabilities in OAuth implementations of other major platforms like Booking.com, Grammarly, and so forth. And so if you have a third-party integration into something, if it's not done properly, if you don't do enough testing, you got to have a bunch of monkeys try to just keep working away to find a way. You know, it's like you have 1,000 monkeys writing at a typing away. Eventually, you have one that does a novel that's perfect. And so this is the case. You just have to have a bunch of things, just try different ways to see if you can break the product before it's released. And unfortunately, this is not the case. People want stuff right away. They want stuff released right away. There's not enough time for beta testing. There's not enough time to figure out if there's vulnerabilities. And in the end, who gets suffers in the end? It's people that are relying on stuff like booking.com or anything like that, trying to streamline the process for getting a flight and then a hotel and a rental car and the whole process. Just be careful. And that's all I got to say. Be very careful with whatever information you provide to anything out there, because eventually it will end up in wrong people's hands.
Okay, technicals aside here, because you did a good job summing that up, I have no other comment there. How good an idea is this type of attack? This is a 10 out of 10 idea. I'll tell you why. There's nothing I hate more than having to dabble in, on my phone at the airport. And so if I was ever going to click on something that was malicious that looked like it wasn't, it would be in an airport. My ticket, my check-in.
You're info. Flustered. You're like,
it's a zoo. And like, Len, that's if it's the middle of the day. Most people fly and they're at the airport at like 4 a.m., right? Like,
you throw in always, kids, you're dragging.
You know what I mean? And like, it's just brutal. And you're thinking about if you forgot stuff. Like, this is the thing. Man, this is a good one. Not to mention, like, I'm as guilty as anybody of the 4 a.m. airport beer, 9 a.m. airport beer. Like, anytime I go away with my buddies or my wife, like, we always joke, like, oh, we're going to get
limit when they stop selling.
International waters, buddy. Yeah,
I'm not a traveler, so I'm not can't really.
There's no limits. Okay. So you know, that's another thing, right? I've seen people in the airport like belligerent, and so you got these guys walking through the airport. They're exhausted. They're loaded. They're spending money at duty free and they're checking their phone for their ticket. Like, what are the odds that you make a mistake? That's got to be as high as the odds get, don't you think?
Yeah, it's a very good point.
Yeah.
And they throw in the confusion and the hustle and bustle.
Yeah.
And the fact that you're in probably an area or you're not familiar with where you're trying to figure out where you're going and
totally
timing at. So
that's
much
if the airport's in your native tongue. Like, if you're coming back,
your native tongue.
The guy across from you didn't get the memo that you're not allowed to have bare feet in the airport.
Then like, all you do is set a malicious link. You click on it and by mistake and boom.
You're cooked. You're cooked. You get on the plane. There's nothing you can do, by the way. You get on the plane.
True. By the time you
there's
land,
nothing you can do. It's just, you're cooked. Like, it just gets better and better the more I think about it. This is an outstanding time to try and pull something like that off. So, I mean, hate it, but kudos to these guys. Like, that is a banger set of circumstances to make that work.
Are they doing any seed round funding for these type of
we got to get in there. I'm about to get my angel wings, so we can give them a couple bucks.
Yeah, this could be really lucrative. I'll send out some feelers after the show. Talk about Hewlett-Packard, HPE.
Sorry, who are we talking about?
Hewlett-Packard.
I haven't heard the name of this company in 15 years. HP. No, at work, I think we have a couple of HP printer scanners maybe. But I haven't thought about HP in a long, long time.
They must still be a huge...
Let's check. Printer. Let's look it up. Hewlett-Packard. What's the Hewlett-Packard stock doing? Hewlett-Packard. Is it publicly traded?
Do you have a printer on site in your house?
At my house?
Yeah.
Probably, yeah. There's one upstairs. I don't think it's plugged in, though.
I have one. It's always plugged in. It's
Is it Hewlett-Packard?
It's a Brother. Brother. But it's. I have to say, this printer is magnificent. It's like 10 years old, color laser, and it just works flawlessly, wirelessly. Like, everybody has issues with printers. This one works with all different operating systems. My phone, my Linux computer, my work Windows computer. It just works. But
what's your guess on the Hewlett-Packard 5-year stock price?
What do you mean? Like, how far it's gone down in
the
5 years?
The price right now is $32.80 US per share. What is the percentage change over the last 5 years?
I'll say 30% drop.
It's up 54%.
See, the people want these products. Well,
booming. Business is booming for the printing industry. What else does HP even do?
Is this in line with inflation? Because you have to overlay that with the M2 money supply.
I don't know.
Then it's just treading water, if anything.
I have no idea.
Anyway, it's HPE. They become the target of a second alleged breach. And a hacking group known as Intel Broker. I'm going to give that a 1 out of 5. Nothing spectacular with
Intel Broker. Yeah, it's snooze.
They're claiming responsibility and threatening to sell to compromise systems. And this, following a previous breach disclosed by HPE ETH. It's also raising concerns about the company on how well it deals with cybersecurity and potentially any sophisticated attacks against them. And the hackers claim that they have the information and they exploited vulnerabilities here. They say that, HP says, that they were able to fully patch everything, but before the patch came into play, they were able to take all the information. And it just goes to show you, like, even HP, a very big company, how much information do they have on, like, what do they have on there that's vulnerable for
me? Well, what's, like, what is HP Enterprise? Like, who are the HP Enterprise, you know, like, customers? That's what I want to know, right? Should look this up before we started, but okay. Hewlett Packard Enterprise is a different, okay, we got a problem here. This is a different thing than Hewlett Packard.
Ah, I see. I was,
okay, we got a problem. Okay, let's redo the 5-year. What's it up in the last? It's up 52%. Oh my God. Maybe it's the same. I don't know.
Anyways, yeah. They say it's difficult to totally get rid of the attacker's presence, preventing them from a return. So even though they patched it, there's some backdoors still that may persist that just can never be totally closed. So there could be some potential future attacks moving forward. So I just wonder, going back again, what type of information does HP have that is so valuable for somebody to take the time and effort to get into their system and steal it and potentially sell it to other people? I'm wondering, what do they have? Are the print jobs stored on a particular server somewhere so you can retrieve everything that's printed? So I have no clue, but I'm at a loss here. Just whatever. If you're an HP user, customer, owner of HP products, be careful.
Quite a few big name companies here. HSBC Hong Kong, Raymond James, FC Barcelona.
They BMW. Probably provide a lot of like enterprise level.
That's what it says, but I still am not sure 100% what the data would look like. Look, at the end of the day, what is the yeah, it's funny at the bottom of the article here. HPE is not HP yet. I know. Here's a good question for you. When I see enterprise, I see cloud, right? Enterprise oftentimes may mean like internally stored, but still cloud-based or server-based. This is another example of how we're getting away from, and I mean, rightfully so, we're getting away from storing stuff locally as a matter of convenience, like you mentioned earlier. And the trade-off is that there are new vulnerabilities appearing all the time. And not only that, but because stuff that's in the cloud is being accessed by, you know, all types of users, you really just have to grab the lowest common denominator user in order to gain access, I would guess, right? And so when you think about these things together, you're asking for trouble. Now, the hacker, you know, to their credit, I suppose, not releasing everything right away, asking for XMR as...
maybe Trump tokens, I don't know.
He's asking for Monero. So like if he's asking for XMR, then he's, you know, he's not completely...
they understand...
Yeah, you know, this guy gets it. You can say whatever you want about XMR as an asset, but there's no doubt the privacy is like as good as it gets. So not to be outdone here. I think that there's going to be more to this story, it looks like. Yeah.
I suspect there's going to be an atomic swap to Bitcoin because nobody wants
maybe
Monero for too long. PowerSchool, this thing really wreaked havoc with a lot of school boards in the United States, Canada. They disclosed in late December 2024 that sensitive data was exposed to millions of students and teachers across numerous school boards because an unauthorized user was able to get access to the customer support portal, and it led to the theft of a lot of information from students and teacher from the database. And it just, you know, there's a lot of information is still trying to figure out. They're still trying to fully understand the what was being breached here and what was taken. But early reports are saying that it could be names, contact information, and in some cases, even stuff that's even more secure, like social security numbers, birth dates, health information. Because, you know, school boards do have that information, especially for people in EpiPens that have.
The point isn't that they have it. The point is, why do they keep it? Like we said last week, what is the rationale for them keeping it that long?
Well, in the last week's episode, we were talking going back to the mid 80s. Yeah. I'm not sure this one is as vast as that. So they still need to keep recent information. Again, if you're a child in a school board, and even if you're in grade 3 and you're by grade 8, that information is probably still relevant. So like, it's not like it's you could get rid of it after a year or two. You got to keep it for probably a period of 10 years or longer. But anyways, this impacted millions of individual users, US, Canada, and other countries as well. And it's really not isolated, because these cyber attacks are happening more and more frequently on educational institutions and schools and school boards. They're a treasure trove of information. So what could you say about this? It's kind of a piggyback off last week's story. When I first was looking at this, I thought maybe this is just a copycat. Yeah. It wasn't. Yeah. Similar, but different, larger in scale. But I think it is much more narrow in terms of time scope. That's just the way I'm looking at it.
So again, the quoted numbers here are 62 million students and 9.5 million teachers.
That's across multiple countries too.
And if you want to know whether or not that number is accurate, consider that PowerSchool spokesperson Beth Keebler responded to the TechCrunch query about that number via a firm called FTI Consulting. You know what FTI Consulting does, Len? Crisis communications. So you tell me if that number is high, low. I think probably it's close to accurate. I mean, if you're contracting a crisis comms firm, then things can't be good. They can't be great, you know, because there's like different levels. Like you could have a lawyer write a statement for you. That's pretty good if things are not as bad as they seem. But if you have to go above that to the lawyer plus the crisis consultant, I'd say you got some trouble on your hands. And that looks to me like what's happening here.
60 something million is what, like three Indian cities?
Yeah.
Combined?
Yeah. Delhi, New Delhi, and Old Delhi, right? I'm pretty sure that whole thing.
It's actually inside Old Delhi. It's inside New Delhi. I've been there. I've seen it. I've traveled it. So, yes. I could tell you stories.
Why do schools keep this info? I don't know. That's one thing I continue to ask. I will always ask that question. When I send my daughter to school at some point in the next few years, I will ask that question as well. How long do you keep the information for? What is your... Every company has an information retention policy, and I want to know what these schools are doing keeping stuff after kids leave. There's no need for you to keep it after the kid leaves. None. Zero.
Well, and even if you homeschool, do you have to provide information to a school board or to level of government? I think in Ontario you probably do, to at least the province of Ontario. So there, even if you homeschool, you're kind of
What information do you have to provide to the province? The province has it all. The province issues you the health card. They know the blood type. They know the birth date. They know the parents.
So there's already a database there somewhere. Which
that's fine. But the province, I hold to a higher standard. I expect the school. You know, the province doesn't have a data retention policy. The province keeps all the data forever. Fine. But the school has to have a retention policy, and they don't. It's the second time in 2 weeks.
I want to know what grade I got in home ec in 1992. It's very important. That information.
I had to get a high school transcript when I was like 20 for something, and it was a nightmare. I had to go to the school board because my high school, now mind you, this was like, you know, pre-proliferating technology in schools, but like this would have been in 2005, six, something like that. No, when I turned 20, I was born in 87. So I turned 20 in 2007 and I went back to my high school and I had to go to the school board to get it. Couldn't get it from my high school. And so that's one way to make sure you don't retain information is that it's not easy to retain. So, you know, is there a place for paper and pen records? I don't know. Maybe
be happy they had that information because clearly you needed it at that particular moment. And
I would have rather just made grades, honestly, looking back.
A, B minus, A, A, A. Yeah, there you go.
Great.
That's it.
Okay, well, what's almost pwned? Did I accidentally open something else here? Maybe I did. Oh, I just want to double check we don't have another story here. But
no, we don't.
Okay, great.
I was just wondering if you could throw in a new one.
I don't know where that came from. There's like an almost pwned thing on my screen. I must have been looking at something earlier. That's what happens when I'm doing research for this show. I wind up going down these rabbit holes. So thanks for stopping by. Latest and greatest in data breach and overreach. And don't forget, sign up for the newsletter. Go to the website, accessofeasy.com. Every week you get those stories plus more. And, you know, Len and I will do the headliners and you can dig into the rest of the stuff in the meantime. So until next week, take care of yourselves.